we start? We're going to start. It's just us. It's kind of a cozy little group tonight. Maybe we'll have more. Doesn't matter. We have enough. We're going to start with a pledge by Leanne. Welcome.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Call to order the CBTV board meeting March 27, 2024. The consent agenda is before you, which includes the approval of the agenda tonight, the approval of the minutes from February 28, 2024, and notice of our next meeting, April 24, 2024. Can I have a motion to accept this consent agenda?
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Ron got the second on that one.
Hi, Mike.
Any discussion? Hearing any? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Okay. All right. We'll move on to board business. We're going to have some open public meetings training.
Do you want to do public comment?
I'm sorry? Oh, public comments. Are there any public comments?
That could have been
shut down by the attorney. Okay. All right. Then we will move on. That's okay. Let's go to the, can we go to fourth quarter financials, Glenn?
Yes. So, I'm not going to say a whole lot. Curtis is here, right?
Yeah,
right across. There you are. Okay. So, just one of the biggest things is every year we try to take an amount put under the assigned area in the fund balances. And this year, we are asking for basically $11.3 million for that, and that is just what that is money that's been in savings basically, and is left for what we can use in the future. And previous years we've used that as something to use for capital items for the most part, and we are proposing that we do that again this year. It's assigned by us, and we can use it for what we need, so it's not some outside entity telling us what we need to do with it. And if there comes a need when we need to use it for something during the year, we can use that. We propose using it for capital items. And if the need should arise, we don't anticipate that if we need it somewhere else, then we would take that opportunity later on in the year to do that. But right now, that's what we propose. Everything else is running as basically anticipated, as what Curtis showed us previously. And so, no surprises. And you know, let Curtis address whatever. Do you have any questions or anything?
Yeah, I rather welcome any questions. Just by way of quick summary, if you go back one page right here. We presented this all last year. Really, there's three significant budget variances, and that's what's explained on this first page. Payroll benefits, we've been through that with how we have people that were on leave, but it was unpaid and they had to have other people in. The other thing that we really got deep into this as we got towards the end of the year, and what we found was with pool, we had planned to staff it up to cover all throughout the day. And what we found was there were certain portions where it made a lot of sense to pull a driver off, which takes them off of payroll, because the demand wasn't there. And so rather than having them sit around, we actually had it function the way that we wanted to. The demand wasn't there, so we pulled them out of service. We actually did have a decent amount that was there. of course, we budgeted to provide all the service that we were hoping. There's just that demand for it. Fuel, that's been pretty clear. We reported that it ran underneath the $5 that we budgeted all year long. And then the interest revenue is the other variance. When you look at those, that's the vast majority of our budget variance. If you go to the next page, because of the capital amounts, I gave you a little bit different view. And so if you look at this one, this one's more condensed, so in some ways it's easier. If you look operationally, on that middle line there, operational net income, we had 2.3 million. We were only expecting about 115,000. The $2 million variance basically is the interest, the fuel, and the payroll. That's $2 million of the $2.2 million variance. So really, that encompasses the vast majority of where our variance was.
Good variance, nobody's going to come from
it. Yeah, it went on the right side of things. But to a certain extent, it was things that there was no way for us to actually anticipate it. When we were standing back in October of 22, I had no idea the Fed was going to go up 500 basis points. I'm not sure anybody did. But this gives you the summary of where we're at. And as Glenn said, we're proposing that assigned amount of fund balance, which is on the balance sheet page. It's about three quarters of the way down. I apologize, I did not highlight that. But it's clearly labeled as assigned $11,287,000. That gets us, that'll get us through the construction project with all of the fund balance that we need, plus give us a little bit of capital for other things that we've got in plans, like the training course on the south end. Questions, comments?
So we operated a $26 million income, and we had $28 million of expenses, and we operated a loss of just about $2 million.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that? Feedback?
It all has to do with the capital outlay. So 4.3, we're spending out capital that we've built up in the past. And so, yeah, we anticipated that we were actually going to have this decrease in fund balance. We actually did a little bit better than what I was expecting. So I think the district is financially secure.
Other questions?
I like that question.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay. Thank you. Okay, there's no action. This is a, for your information only presentation. The next one is action on
the assigned. Yeah, on
the assigned one, we'd like to have some, do that formally for
folks. Help me understand what you'd like.
The assigned portion that went over.
What's the motion here, Glenn?
I move that we.
No, just tell me what the motion is, and I'll make the motion, and you can make you can do the first.
Right. So it's so that we propose that we assign that, the motion is to accept that assigned.
So the motion needs to be, I need a motion to assign the fund excess balance of $11.2 million. And can I get a motion?
So moved. There you go. So moved. Second.
Can I get a second?
Second.
Okay, Glenn did this second. All right, all in favor, or discussion? Any discussion on this?
Questions more on that. It is, just letting you know, it's a little less than what we had last year, but that's because we've been spending, we assigned a little bit more last year, but we were able to use that for this purpose. And so
perfect.
That's where we are.
Thank you. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Not seeing any. The motion carries. Okay, let's go to the consideration for the fund balance designation. Is that the same thing?
Yeah, that's it.
Well, that's what I was going to next.
And now we're back.
All right, let's go. Let's get our attorney up here. Esquire Dallin Peterson from the Honorable Olson & Hogan firm.
Thank you very much. Well, I've got a handout, actually, that I'm going to pass out. I think I should have enough. I'm going to take one and pass it down. This is just a company PowerPoint that I've got up here. And this should answer most questions, too. This gives a little more detail. And I'll kind of give an overview. Was anybody here at the last year's training that I did? A few people. Oh, okay, most. So most of this is going to be familiar. There are some changes. However, there was a new bill passed this year that does amend some of the definitions, for example, of what a meeting is. So I'm going to cover that here, and that's highlighted in this handout. I'll just say, though, while there are amendments, I would say substantively there's really not much of a change. It's mostly linguistic. Some of it is to clarify or simplify some of the language of the code, and then other parts of it are to adjust, for example, electronic meetings. So I'll kind of cover that, but just so you know, as a general matter, I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with the changes that have gone through, but it mostly stays the same, okay? Okay, so if you can click to the next slide. So I'm going to talk about open meetings, closed meetings, agendas, minutes. Most of it's going to be on the open and closed meetings. Go to the next slide.
I can get the clicker.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, that works too.
That'll be a lot easier.
Thank you. Okay, so this meeting also is fulfilling one of the requirements of the Act, which is to have an annual training on public meetings, open public meetings, so we're already complying with the Act. We're starting off with the primary amendment, the primary change to the Act. So the former definition gave specific requirements of what constituted an open and public meeting, and then it also gave some specifics as to what did not constitute an open and public meeting. And if you look at your handout in that first, let's see, I gave away all my copies. I think in the first or second paragraph.
You're right.
Thank you. I left the language for the most part the same. So a public meeting, for example, and this is the definition, this is the new definition. It's anytime you've got a gathering, a public gathering of a body or specified body, when a quorum is present, and that's important, that is convened by an individual with the purpose of discussing or receiving comments or making decisions about relevant matters to Cache Valley Transit District. So what they did is they just took a whole bunch of code section and reduced it down to a singular definition. So that's this here. The way that it works is you've got to meet all the elements for there to be an open public meeting, okay? So it's got to have a quorum present, it's got to be convened by an individual with the authority to convene the meeting, and it's got to be for the express purpose of essentially carrying out CBTD actions, okay? So it's got to be relevant. Are there any questions just about this definition or about the changes before
I
move on?
Can I just ask one question?
Sure.
I know of one body that does an early study group before their actual meeting. The entire entity is present. Arguably, they kind of make the decision in that room. Then they go out in the public meeting and they vote. Is that permissible?
No, that's a great question. And so that's what this is getting to, this code here. So like you said, there was a body that was doing that. Essentially, what they were doing is having the meeting beforehand,
yeah,
specifically to avoid having to discuss it out in the public. So that's what this next section covers. So this is the in section 52, chapter 208. So individuals constituting a quorum may not act together outside a meeting in a concerted and deliberate way to predetermine those actions. So again, the thing to keep in mind here is that it's if a quorum meets together, okay? So individuals can still talk to each other. You guys can still, you know, run into each other at the store, at a dinner, social gathering. So that's all still the same. What we're trying to avoid again is specifically holding a meeting to decide, to make decisions, but then showing up at the actual public meeting and just voting on the decision and moving forward. So thank you, that's a great question. Any other questions about how this operates?
But it is permissible to have two of us meet together or have someone meet with two of us and give us updates
correct
about what's gonna be talked about if we need that kind of.
So for us, the magic number is four. You get to that fifth person, we're in four.
Yep, that's right. And that, and just to point out too, that also includes electronically meeting, right? So if you're meeting, it doesn't necessarily just mean in person. That's right. So yeah, if you keep it below four, I think you're fine. As soon as you have a quorum, then you just want to make sure that you're complying. Okay. So there are a few small changes to the electronic meetings. I don't think that they substantively change anything. So if you, and I kind of included that in the handout. The act, by the way, these new amendments go into effect May 1st this year, so they're technically not quite effective. The changes to the electronic meetings, like I said, really just simplify the language. Let me just get to that here. No. So they've changed it now so that it's a meeting that some or all members of the public body attend through an electronic video, audio, or both connection. And I think I may have included that language here. Yep. So this is the new language regarding an electronic meeting. Again, I think practically speaking, it's the same as it was before, but they've tried to simplify this down. Any questions about that change on electronic meetings?
That doesn't have to be a quorum.
That's right. That's right. Well, if you're having a public meeting, then it does have to be a quorum. If you're just communicating again through email or whatever, that's right. Okay. Okay, so there's a difference between obviously a public hearing and a public meeting. So if you have a public hearing, it's a portion of the open meeting where the public has an opportunity to comment on the subject, they can ask questions. Public hearings are required if there's rate changes, if there's a resolution regarding impact fees, name changes, and tax levies. Okay, any other questions about public or open meetings? Public hearings. Okay. All right, for closed meetings, these are closed to the public and the press. They can only be convened for specific purposes, and a lot of these are straightforward when you look at them. Essentially, if the board needs to discuss things that are of a sensitive nature or that are, you know, strategic, trying to secure a deal, or if they're about criminal matters or investigations, obviously all those things we'd want to have not open to the public at first, at least. So some of the specific purposes that a closed meeting can be held are to discuss the character, competence, or health of an individual, deployment of security personnel, collective bargaining issues, pending litigation, investigative proceedings regarding criminal misconduct, land deals. So if there's discussions about purchasing or leasing property, obviously all those things we'd want to have in closed meetings. And if there's any information that needs to be private or protected, then that would also be in the closed meeting. So again, the purpose here is some matters are going to be sensitive. You got to discuss these closed in a closed meeting prior to bringing that out to the public. And a closed meeting can only be held for one of these purposes. So that's something to just make clear that you've got to look at the statute. There's specifically enumerated reasons to hold a closed meeting. Okay, any questions about that? Okay, so the process for entering a closed meeting, obviously, you've got to have it noticed on an open meeting schedule, so you've got to put it on the agenda. There's got to be a motion to enter a closed meeting, and then a two-thirds vote is required to actually go into a closed meeting. No board action may be taken in a closed meeting, so that's just more for deliberative processes. You can discuss things and then take action once you come back. You've got to publicly announce on the record that you're going into a closed meeting, state the location of the meeting, and then report the vote of each board member who voted for or against. Okay, any questions about closed meetings?
Yeah, I have one for the public, just for our clarification. So administratively, if they vote to go into a closed session, does that mean it's a roll call vote? So that each board member has to state specifically, or can it just be a broad all in favor, aye, any opposed, nay?
That is a good question. I will have to check. I don't know if anybody.
I think we remember this from the last time we had one. I think we need to
roll call. We've never done roll call. Yeah, not to enter and exit.
Did we?
I think we did. I think we, it says you have to say who voted for it and against it to enter in.
Yeah, maybe. I will check the statute and get a response back exactly. I, off the top of my head, I can't remember if it's a roll call or if it's just...
Thanks for letting me interrupt.
No, that's a good question.
So Dallin, can I ask another question?
Sure.
Why would a board like ours just not do this whole closed meeting over email rather than actual meeting?
Yeah, well, that good reason for that. You gotta be present for it, so...
But the functionally, you could accomplish the exact same thing over an email, right?
Yes,
but it's open to open record, public records request.
You can't have a closed meeting without an open meeting.
Right, yeah. So you've got to have an open meeting, you've got to notice it up.
But I think he's saying, can you accomplish the same? You don't even have a meeting, you just...
Yeah, why we're not just working around the rule, I mean...
Yeah, well, so you can't work, well...
Certainly a grandma request would show all the emails, but...
So I guess if I'm understanding your question, why can't you hold a closed meeting via electronic means only?
No, I don't know. Why can't you make a closed meeting rather than making all the hoopla about a closed meeting? I just do the whole thing over email, right?
Oh, no. Because the public's entitled to know when you're having a closed meeting,
okay.
Right? Yeah, and they have to know also what you're discussing. So you do have to give notice as to, you know, whether, I don't know, pending litigation. Doesn't have to be specific, right? But you do have to notice up, hey, we're going into a closed meeting for, you know, discussions of X purpose. So that does have to be, yeah.
And the benefit of that is that there's no grammar request that can see that information or?
Well, I'd have to check that as well. I'm not actually positive about whether
we don't record them.
You don't record.
When we get them.
That's right. You don't record them, but as far as.
But you go back into the public meeting to make the
decision.
The decision.
Right.
Yeah, you have
but the discussion isn't.
No, I'm thinking of if you had documents or anything as part of the discussion.
Uh-huh.
But you're right. The actual deliberative process is not going to be recorded. That's right.
Thank you.
And if there are any other questions that I can't answer here, I'll find answers for you, just so you know. So I'll go and double check these.
Can I back up to open meeting?
Sure. Uh-huh.
If we were at a conference and we were sitting at a table where all of us could be seated, does that constitute a violation because there's a quorum there?
Probably not. And the reason why is because they say the new amendment says that it has to be convened for the purpose of discussing a relevant matter, and that's defined as a matter that CBPD has authority over or can act on. You gather together, there's five of you together, and you're talking about something unrelated to CBTD's work, and then it gets brought up. Okay, I don't think that that would be considered a meeting here because it wasn't convened for that purpose. Now, that is, I think there are some potential issues with the language as it is written now versus what it was before. It's unclear how that's going to be played out. I mean, I think there are.
So, as a practical matter, in Washington, I was on a city council, and five of us went to the same congregation or church. And of seven, and we had to clear up on this. But I mean, we didn't have to notice anything clearly, but that happened, and it's okay.
Yeah,
we just can't talk about city business or county or bus business.
Yeah. Like so as long as the discussion doesn't include any business of the district, then
decision, especially
we can have a meal together and not violate.
Well, that's a great question because we have like the barbecue, the employee barbecue, and we usually help out at that. You could have a quorum.
Yeah,
just being there and helping out.
That's right. It isn't just having a quorum. I mean, that's an important factor to keep in mind. I that's just a good rule of thumb if there's at least five of you together, maybe just be thinking about it. But it does have to be a meeting that's convened to discuss these issues. And that second statute that they've changed that says that you can't, so individuals may not act together outside a meeting in a concerted and deliberate way to predetermine an action. I think that's it. They use that language on purpose, right? What they're trying to get at is you can't hold secret meetings and then come in and actually hold the real meeting later on. So I do think that if you're in a group together, even if there's a quorum, and even if you're somewhat discussing the CBTD stuff, what you can't do is do that in order to make decisions later. And so if it, and I do think there's maybe a risk, obviously if the public perceives that this has gone on, there is a risk that they might raise this issue and say, hey, you guys are just doing backdoor deals without following the process. Yeah.
content of what we discussed is the determining factor.
It's one of the determining factors. Whether there's a quorum, and then whether the content you're just, whether the meeting was called for the purpose of discussing that content, and then whether that content was discussed. I would say there's at least those three factors.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, for notice, just briefly, this kind of gets to some of the issues we've talked about earlier. So regular meetings that are scheduled in the course of a year, you've got to have notice of those. Specify the date, time, and place of each meeting. So for regular meeting agendas, you've got to give at least 24 hours public notice. And I think you guys do a pretty good job of that. I don't know. Are there any questions about giving notice on meetings?
Can a posting on the district's website constitute notification?
There are specific requirements there, so I don't know off the top of my head whether that satisfies all of it. I'd have to look at the...
There's a specific Utah public notice website that we have to post on.
I just ask because my wife is on the school board and they go to extreme lengths to make sure that their meetings are hosted so people can know.
Yeah, there are specific requirements, and I have to...
You used to have to advertise it in the newspaper.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly.
You can have emergency meetings. Sometimes meetings may need to be held quickly. You might not have time to follow all the restrictions or all the requirements, and so these are some of the reasons that you... So if there's unforeseen circumstances, then you can hold an emergency meeting. But you've got to make sure that you attempt to notify all board members and to the extent possible, give notice of the date, time, and place of the items to be considered, and then a majority of the board approves that meeting. Any questions about emergency meetings? I don't know if you, do these ever even come up? I don't know how often you have emergency meetings. Okay, for meeting agendas, so these have got to be reasonably specific. I know there was some questions in the past about what actually you have to put on the agenda, but the language is reasonably specific, okay? So you've got to give some kind of notice as to what's going to be talked about. And you can only discuss topics that are on the agenda unless a topic is raised by a member of the public. So that's, we've got to have it up front. Everybody has to be aware of what's going to be talked about. And then no final action can be taken on any item or topic that's not on the agenda. So this kind of, again, with the closed meetings, that's why we had to have notice on the agenda that there's going to be a closed meeting and about what the topic's going to be. So that has to be ahead of time. Any questions about agenda? Okay, and then last thing is that minutes have to be taken of each board meeting. And again, I think it's pretty straightforward. I don't know if there's any questions about minutes. And then, yeah, once these are approved, then they become permanent record. They've got to be properly labeled. Okay. These are kind of all in the handout there, too, if you've got specific questions regarding that. Okay. That's everything I've got. Like I said, the changes in the act go into effect on May 1st this year. You can actually go look on the, you can see the enrolled version of the bill, which is, it shows all the amendments that have been made. There are more amendments than what I've talked about here, but like I said, I don't think that they really go to the substance of the act. A lot of them are just changing one word here or there, or you know, adding a comma, putting a period here. So it's mostly linguistic, and I think it's just to simplify things. The primary purpose of the change, like I said, was to make adjustment about those meetings. So making sure that the meetings are held open and that the deliberative process is out in the open and allows the public to see that. Any final questions about anything? Okay.
Thank you, Dale.
Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, moving on, we are at management report. Todd, tell us about route realignment and that process.
Yeah, so I really appreciate, we met with the executive committee last week, and Patrick always asks me really good questions, it makes me think. So I kind of wanted to just go through you kind of what we've got planned for the public information process. And so I'm going to have Colton bring up a website.
You only want a website.
And then can you give me the mouse?
I just plug it back.
No, it's not working. It's not even on. Well, that's all right. Okay, we got it. Okay, so this will be the landing page. Up here, you see this line up here that says view alerts and detours. So this will be on our homepage. This is the page that you'll click on, but this will turn tomorrow, this will turn to take our survey. And so they'll see that on the landing page, and then that will take them to this page. And so a couple things that we're doing. So one, on all of the buses that go on these routes, so this is the great thing about the technology we now deploy. So we are going to have, so on the bus themselves that are on these routes, so we can target it to these specific routes. As the bus is coming into the transit center or leaving the transit center, we're still trying to work out when we're going to do that. But an announcement will say, hey, we're making changes to Route 6, 7, 8, 9. Again, it will only be on those routes that it's made. Please take our survey. And then on the buses themselves, we'll have, can you go to that PDF real quick? Yeah. Sorry, I'm going to make it go back and forth. But so on the buses themselves, we'll also have, yep, there we go. This right here to where they can just scan the QR code and we'll take them to the survey. Don't have a smartphone, paper survey is available at the transit center. So folks that don't have access to a smartphone can go to the transit center and take the survey. Then jump back, sorry.
Oh, you're good.
So,
oops, I went back to the same thing.
So then they'll come here. And so then we're going to do a couple things. So we have a link, or we have an ability that one, will track how many people come to this page. We'll also track how many people start a survey. We'll track how many people complete the survey. So we're going to be tracking, you know, how many people come here, get here, then how many people read the information and don't take the survey, how many people take the survey, how many people quit the survey early. So we'll have access to all of that information. And so what this has the reason to we're making the changes.
And will people, like, is that for, so if I was wanting to do the survey five times, would you know it?
Yeah, if you don't have a unique IP address. Okay. Now, you could do it on your computer, and you could do it on your phone, right?
But no, that just limits the ability of people to.
Sure. But really, really, you know, honestly, what we're trying to get at is the people that have concerns. Right, and so if they express that concern, you're right, they could game it a little bit, but if it's the same concern, I mean, you know, it's
not a popularity contest.
Yeah. No. But it's fair, I mean, it's a valid point. But so, again, we're just trying to make it to where folks can access this information. You're going to find all this is in the survey, too. But so they can click by route if they want to just look at each individual route, they can get information. We have the proposed timetable. We have the stops that are going to be removed so they can see if that's impacted. Again, we've said here, well, these stops are going to be removed, but they're actually going to be on the other side of the street because we're changing the direction. We're having the location where stops are going to be added. And so let's say they only want to look at Route 6, then they can jump to the survey. Or they can say, well, I want to look at Route 7 as well. So we're giving them opportunities all through here. They don't have to look at every route if they want to. And then down here, they can look at all of the routes if they need to see visually. Okay, what does that whole service area look like before versus now? And then the survey also has much the same information to where as they go through this, they see all of that same information so they don't have to remember as they're trying to take the survey. They can look through all this information and then come down here. We just have really two simple questions. How do you feel about the changes? You have comments, and I'm just going to click through this real quick. So that's for each individual route, you will. And they don't have to fill something out on this. They can just skip through that, right? And then when we get to the end, you know, we just want to know how do they engage with us? How do they get their information? And then if you'd like to be contacted, we want to give them an opportunity. If they have concerns, if they're that concerned, we want to get in contact with them. We want to hear those concerns and understand those things. So we're going to push this out through our social media as well. So Facebook, those types of things. We can target, we can boost those ads so that we push that out more. I'm getting with Mayor Danes and asking Logan City to help us push it out through them because obviously this is impacting their residents. I haven't talked with her yet, but I'm pretty confident. She's always been really good to support us in trying to get the message of these things out. We'll also have flyers posted at the Transit Center, encouraging people to take the survey as well. Then once this is done, so we're going to keep this open through the month of April. I would encourage you guys to, you know, talk to people, encourage them to take this. We want to get feedback. So we'll have this open through the month of April. We'll get that feedback, see if there's anything that we've missed, we need to tweak based on that feedback, come back to the board with that information, and then come in with our recommendation, what we think the final changes should be. And then once those changes have go into effect in August, we have our normal process that we get in engagement from the public, right? So we have people can call us on the phone. We have a website, and we push things through that. And we're pretty confident. People are pretty good at engaging us that way. We're pretty good. But Patrick had a good suggestion, and I'm totally fine with that. We'll open the survey back up for 30 days after the changes are implemented to give them another opportunity to get feedback that way. So again, our goal here is we really, much of what this if I go back, let's see, yeah. So much of what these changes come from are safety, reliability, but also if you look at their number five, it's things we've heard from the public over time. It's things we've heard from our employees, the drivers over time. I mean, and so a lot of this is based on feedback we've already received. But again, we're excited for the opportunity to get feedback or try to engage with the public. I'm really hopeful we get a lot of response to this. So that's kind of the process that we have planned at this point. Questions, comments?
Yeah, so is this survey available only in English? Because I know that a lot of
we'll translate it into Spanish, we do with the things that we do, and I appreciate you bringing that up. But we'll definitely do that as well. We have a portion of our writing public that are Spanish.
I think if it's on the website, we can use the Google Translate feature. Because it's not a PDF, it'll automatically translate over.
But we can also do the paper ones in Spanish as well.
Yeah.
Great comment. Other questions?
Other discussion?
KSL had an item that they discussed on the news about QR codes. And I just wondered if anybody has asked the question about how secure we feel about our QR codes.
Colton and I have actually talked about this, and Colton's our IT guy, and so I'm going to let Colton talk about that a little bit, if you're okay, Colton.
So how they can be hijacked, some of the easiest ways they're doing it is someone makes a QR out of a sticker, and they just go put it over the top of one of ours. So kind of our step is that we're going to try to make sure that whatever we post is always the full page, like just that. We don't put a sticker over the top for the public to help know that that hasn't been changed. The next thing is that the survey is being done through our domain on our website, so the web part can't be hijacked. So it basically, it doesn't protect from everything. Like I said, someone could throw a sticker over a bus. We don't catch it for a day or two, and then someone scans it, and it takes them into something that's not that. But that's where having information on the actual paper about what that QR code is going to take you to helps people as well. So they don't get taken to some other link that they have to log into. Or anything like that.
Great question.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Todd.
Yeah.
Let's go to 2024 projects, please.
Yeah, so, you know, I thought about this, and I thought, you know, we really should probably cover this a little bit. Jody, Curtis, these guys are so good. Sometimes, you know, I get thinking and I forget all the stuff we're doing. And so I'll be like, hey, we what about this? And they'll be really good to, hey, remember? They're like, hey, remember we got this? I'm like, oh, yeah. So I thought it would be helpful for you maybe just to see some of the things that we've got scheduled for this year. And I'm trying to figure out how to do this in a way that's meaningful for you and helpful for you. But so just a couple of things. So the financial audit, the auditors just left yesterday, but we still got some work to do on that. A line item budget tool for the board. We definitely want to work on that. Signal priority with UDOT. That's still in the works. We're hoping by June. That's the latest I talked with Blaine, that by June they'll start upfitting our buses. They've upfit the lights, but now they've got to come in, and so they've got to go through every bus and put all of the technology in there. Rebranding is going to touch uniforms, bus stops, the buses. There's other things associated with that, that it's going to take time. Our trainer review is scheduled for July, and we've been anxiously involved in that already. We've kind of talked about that. We've got three bus stops that are significant projects. Cache Valley Marketplace, which is the one by Quick Quack, as that new development comes in there. Part of the requirement that Logan City's put on the developers that we upfit that bus stop, so we're involved with that. There's one on 10th West, and they're putting in a Mountain America Credit Union on 10th North and 10th West. And so there's an impact there. One out at Green Canyon. And so some of these, and then also with that is the route realignment that we're talking about with 6, 7, 8, and 9. There's many of those bus stops that are going to be moved that are on UDOT right away. And while it used to be simple to just put in a bus stop, it is not anymore. It is a long process. And that's part of why, again, we're looking at August 5th. Some of these, even just bus stops, take 90 days to get all through the whole permitting process. So it's a significant thing. We're upfitting our maintenance software that we use. We're going to do a vehicle transition study where we're really looking at what are the challenges with moving to electrification. How does that work? What are the costs associated with that? What are we responsible for? And we just want to come back to the board with a lot of information so that the board can help us say, hey, when do we want to transition? How much of the fleet do we want to transition? What's the right vehicles to pursue? We're also doing a bus stop, a bicycle and bus stop amenity plan for the whole system. Where do we, as we look at electric bikes and we have a lot of bikes in the system that we transport. Where do we need to have places where we put bike storage for folks if the bike rack's full? Where do we upfit amenities, bus stop amenities? And so we're looking at a whole system-wide plan there. Procurements, we're going to be doing the furniture for procurement for the new facility, our fuel procurement, I probably haven't announced this, but Congressman Moore personally gave me a call the other day congratulating us on the fact that he helped us secure $2 million to that facility. We designated it for training course, but it may be used for other things. We wrote that application in such a way that we could use it for other things, but that was what kind of the thought process was. But, so really, we really need to thank Congressman Moore for helping us get that funding. But so we're looking at a procurement to hire a design team to help us design that training course. The loop bunching. So one of the things we struggle with, and this is not unique to us, this is something Bronco probably attested. This is something across the country. Whenever you have frequency-based transit, that means you have multiple vehicles on that same route. It's often that they end up bunching together, and so we're trying to figure out ways in which we can keep that from happening. And we've deployed different things, technology and other things, but we're still working on that. And then just ongoing training that we're doing. So that's just a few of the things that we've got scheduled for 2024, in addition to just operating things, in addition to, building a facility that takes a lot of time. But exciting stuff. 2024 is a great year. So. Okay.
The targeted data that you and Colton are working on, with me for the county first, but a pipeline that you can use for anybody.
Yeah, so we'll be shown probably next month, I'm thinking, right? Shown a handout that really can help you use this on-off data that we've worked so hard to get that technology in place and really kind of take it to your communities and show it off and really show kind of the power behind that. So, yeah. Other questions on that? One other thing that I failed to put on here was just as a FYI, we just updated our EEO plan, our equal opportunity plan, right? And so, excuse me, my phone rings and screams in my ears. So we've just updated that. That doesn't have to come to the board. It's an administrative update. But we've just gone through that and updated that plan, set new goals for that plan cycle. So,
can we have a line or agenda item just to update on the facility?
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, so things are progressing well. We've had some good weather days, which is really nice. Really helped. So. If you go by there, I always encourage you to drive by there. We're looking at taking the building committee probably in May and doing an on-site tour. But if you ever wanted to do that, we could arrange that with you as well. But so we've got everything pretty much covered with roof decking at this point. And these guys are going to tell me, all three of these guys are going to tell me if I missed a beat. The actual maintenance area, the membrane's on, the roof membrane. I think even the administrative area, right? It's, well, not quite all the way. So, but yeah, it's looking good. I mean, we're still working on underground electrical and stuff like that in the Lakes area. But it's looking really good. We've got pretty much roof on everything as far as just overall coverage.
When it's further along, it wouldn't be bad if the whole board can
do it. We can arrange that. It's still as far as just the interior, there's still just a lot of dirt and it's been muddy. Quite frankly, we all bought a pair of boots just to go out there.
It takes 4 years of time.
Wade through it. But yes, absolutely. We can arrange that as it gets.
So we should keep this construction going in perpetuity to keep the rain coming in the valley.
There you
it's
go.
It's worked really well the last 2 years.
Right. It's going well. These guys are doing a great job dealing with that and managing.
Just out of curiosity, the $5 million that's coming from the state, is that just an award or is that a reimbursement?
So it comes in the form of an actual award, I believe, and so we still it comes through UDOT. So we're in the early processes. I've reached out to UDOT. I'm trying to find the person we actually talked to get our hands on that money. There'll be some type of contract that has some type of reporting function to it, but
is that probably pretty broad as far as use?
Yeah, it's for that facility project. So, yeah. Good question.
Okay, another discussion?
This $2 million we just got from the Fed, that's just new money that just happened recently.
Yeah, so I mean, it's actually been quite a while in the process, right? Because the Feds take a while to fund that, but yeah, so it's brand new. I mean, we've just Congress has just passed the bill that actually funds that. So, yeah.
Is that $2 million in addition to the $5 million? Is that $2 million that we can use for anything?
Well, it's designated for that facility. So, like I said, primarily our thought is for the training course, and that's kind of how we wrote it. But we also kept it broad enough that it could be used for other portions of the facility, like maybe fencing, security, and whatnot.
You were 8 million short to start out with. Is that 7 million? Is that 8 or is that 2 million different?
That 2 million we identified for the training course and not necessarily for that facility, but we could use it. We wrote it in such a way that if we needed to, if we still felt like we were short, even with the 5 million from the state, that we could designate for that.
And we just added 2 million carryover from last year.
So, Patrick and I are going to be going back in May to meet with our delegation members again. And again, this time we're probably not asking for money. We're probably going to be asking for some regulatory things. There's some things that we're trying to do with changing some of the requirements for things. And so that's probably going to be our message this time. But again, these visits are very important, just keeping us in front of these guys. And again, say anything other than it shows that we have a relationship with Representative Moore, that he would make a personal phone call. And that's these visits, quite frankly, and it's having them come here and we'll have a ribbon cutting at this facility and have folks here for that. So these are important opportunities.
We're still looking at first quarter.
I'm thinking probably April, but let's hope that we sneak under that, but probably April of 25.
Curtis, an estimate on the total amount of federal funds we've received in the last 4 years for this kind of a project, this project specifically?
For the building project?
Yeah.
I think the last time we looked, we've been awarded $38 million. It was just shy of $40 million.
Okay. So I made this comment before. I'm going to continue to make it. I mean, huge accolades to Curtis and to Todd. I mean, this is a lot of hard work. It didn't just fall in anybody's lap. It's been 5-6 years of working with the delegation, working with lobbyists, working with our trade association. These guys have worked really hard to get as much as we have. Other entities will go into debt for this. We've avoided that. So there's tremendous stewardship of this system. So well done.
Amen.
Really well done.
Amen.
Other comments from the board? I just want to make a couple recognitions of some of our employees. We, you know, and this says everything about the work atmosphere, that we have such strong retention. So Steve Naylor has been a driver for 5 years. Ellen Cooper's been a driver for 5 years. Monty Baker's been a driver for 13 years. And then Laurie Shoup has been in dispatch for 8 years. So what a great environment this has been to work in, that we can retain good, talented people. So thanks. Other comments? Public comment?
One last thing, just
yes.
FYI. We're going to be getting on the calendar our summer barbecue. Aaron mentioned that. So we'll be getting that to you here as soon as we get it scheduled. But here in the next week, probably we'll have a schedule for that.
Okay. We stand adjourned.